Hello, and welcome to the Mystic OG podcast, hosted by the Adult Faith Programs at St. Stephen Martyr Church in Chesapeake, Virginia. In Greek, the word mystagogy means leading through the mysteries. In the earliest centuries of Christianity, mystagogy referred to the practice of helping Christians to appreciate more deeply the Christian mysteries into which they had been initiated by baptism, confirmation, and reception of the Eucharist. This present program of mystagogy is being developed and taught by Barbara Nicolosi Harrington, a university professor of screenwriting, cinema, great books, and theology. In this second presentation on Dante's Purgatorio, Barbara discusses healing remedies for the sins of envy, anger, sloth, and greed.
So, yeah, here we are in our real time in purgatory. So last week was the antechamber, not purgatory proper, but the pre-purgatory, the purgatory of purgatory, if you will. But now this week we really enter in, and I did have to say, you really have to read it and try, maybe during Lent, pick it up a little bit, because I'm not going to do justice to how beautiful it is. The description of the hymns that are being sung, the stories, every level of purgatory has a part of Mary's life as an example of the perfect disciple. And it's so beautiful to read, but I'm going to really just get the nitty-gritty of dealing with the sins, huh? Okay, good. So let's plunge in here. And I just want to say, I'm not going to say much about the Gate of Purgatory ritual, except that you got to read it. It's a beautiful part of the book. But coming into purgatory proper is actually like you're now in heaven. You're really in heaven. And so there's the angels guarding the gate on behalf of St. Peter. And then they have the music, the Te Deum is being sung by as the souls come into the Gate of Purgatory. And then they have this ritual where the seven P's get carved on the heads of all of the souls. And the idea of the peccata, the seven deadly sins, and they're heavy, they're weighed down by them. And as they go up the mountain and they get them wiped off, they get lighter and lighter, till at the very end, he's almost floating because all the weight of his sins has been worked off. And just lovely stuff, ritual, ceremony, music, all of that. Okay. Now, one of the things I want to emphasize is, remember in hell, the first thing on the very first page of hell was, this is the place where people have lost their use of reason. Remember that everybody in hell is like nuts? Well, so Dante's thesis is sin makes you crazy. So a huge part of purgatory is helping souls reclaim their rational faculty. It's like there's a huge part of this is we're going to go through your mind and help you to figure out how you've been wrongly thinking. And your wrongly thinking has made you not love the way you should. But it's like, how do I correct the wrong thinking in you than each of these sins? So we're going to see God uses, he's going to make his case. Huh? He's presenting his case through great art. There's a lot of great art in purgatory that God himself has crafted. And Dante's saying, if you put great art in your life, great music, great poetry, great story, great sculpture, it's going to, and you sit at its feet humbly, it's going to affect you for the good. Now, he's a poet, so he's not exactly objective, but that's a very strong thing, that he really believes the beautiful is a conduit to love and right thinking. Number two, examples and stories. So from history, from classical tradition, from the Bible, there's going to be every level. There's going to be three stories that are meant to be something that the souls there brood over and brood over as a way of getting it right, of thinking rightly. And then targeted tasks. They all have something they need to do on their levels. And the targeted tasks are accompanied by community prayer. So the group of souls on every level are rooting for each other. They're not like in hell where they were hating each other, ignoring each other, or brutalizing each other, chewing on each other's brains. Right? They're trying to help each other. And so the number one way they do that is prayer. Pretty much every single level of purgatory, somebody asks Dante for prayer. And so it really infuses the work, okay? Okay. With that said, let's talk about envy. So I'm skipping over pride because we're going to do that one on Saturday. And so this is like the next level up from pride is envy. Envy. And what you find here is that all of the envious souls are sitting around with their eyes wired shut. And it's an oral cure because they can't see. They're hearing all kinds of things that are helping them get over their envy. Now, the idea of the envious is that, again, the geography is that it's all the color of a bruise. Because envy bruises your ability to appreciate. It bruises your ability to enjoy life. It bruises life, literally. It's an act of violence. So everything here is the color of bruises, including the robes that the souls are wearing. Oh, I know what I was going to say. So the different thing about purgatory from hell is that purgatory is transitory. Everybody who goes there has to work their way up all seven levels. And so you may not have as big a problem with envy as you do with gluttony or lust, but you still have to pay your dues. And some of the souls will pop out fast early, and then there'll be the trumpets blow. Somebody would just ascend into heaven. Yay, they skipped two levels. And that's usually because of prayer. But for the most part, everybody is working their way up the mountain, okay? So when you first get to the envy terrace, where all the envious are, you hear three words being repeated and repeated. They have no wine. I am Orestes, and love your enemies. And this is going to be repeated in the background. There's psalms being sung and these words. But let's just step back for a second and say what envy is as opposed to jealousy, because sometimes people get confused. Huh? So envy is this: if only I had her looks, if only I had her lifestyle, if only I had his success, if only I had his youth. Envy is wanting the stuff that other people have to the extent of coveting where you could take it and get away with it, you would. Jealousy is worrying about someone's going to take what you have, and principally a person. Like there's somebody in my life that I feel belongs to me and you are getting in the way now. All right? So envy is really about stuff. There's lots and lots in the Bible about the danger of envy, how it can lead to much worse things. Proverbs, a sound heart is the life of the flesh, but envy the rottenness of the bones. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. 30 different Bible verses on envy here. And how problematic it is. And I love this quote by Epstein. He says, of the seven deadly sins, only envy is no fun at all. Which is interesting. You're not really getting a charge from it. Why do we do it? But we do. Yeah. Okay. So what we see when he comes into this terrace is that each soul is supporting another with his shoulder because they're all blind. And so these people who have spent their lives looking at the stuff that other people have and feeling anger for that now are blind together, and they're dependent on each other. They have to make their way around the level, which is a stony upward climb mountain, and they all have to help each other. And it's hard going. But the point is that they're going to learn what matters is these people, not their stuff. Okay, so the three words, the first one, they have no wine, is Mary at the wedding of Cana. And Dante says she's a model for the envious because she wasn't focused on what she didn't have, but what her neighbors needed. She was watching them, she was so attentive to them that she saw they had no wine instead of what I don't have. So right aware that right there, it's, oh, one cure of envy is instead of focusing on what other people have, try and focus on what they need. What can I do for them instead of what could I take from them? And it's a way of reordering your thinking. Number two is I am Orestes, and this is a famous story from Greek mythology about these two buddies. And I believe one of them committed a murder to avenge his father. And then when they're brought in front of, I think it's the queen, they both say, I'm Orestes, I'm the one who did it. And so they're both giving their life for their friend. And it's, in other words, I, instead of being envious of you, I am focused on how, like, giving even more to the extent of giving my life for you. And then number three, from the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, love your enemies. So the idea of brooding over the thing with the envious is they construe that other people are their enemies because they have stuff that I don't have. And it makes me hate them. So the idea is, what does loving this enemy look like for me? And so, as St. Thomas says, love literally is intentionally acting to bless someone. And so now we're saying we're going to do that for someone who we feel has injured us intentionally. That's really pushing the Sermon on the Mount. We meet a lady in the envious level, and she confesses that she was the worst kind of envier because she actually envied the wicked. She watched people who were doing bad things and getting ahead, and she feels bad that she's not getting what they're getting. So this kind of adds another whole level. This is more than just saying, wow, I wish I had your waistline, right? This is, I wish I could get away with being wicked and evil if, like you do. And I'm mad at you that I can't. She says, I found more joy in the bad luck of others than in the good that fell to my own lot. And so she cautions, she's like, what you have to do is instead constantly say, what is the good that has come to me? What is the good that is in front of me right now? When I feel the waves of envy, I have to redirect my thinking to my blessings. Now, at the end of the envious level, we hear two other voices, which are the voices of despair, and they're emanating out of hell. And they're there because, again, the envious are blind, they're getting an oral cure, and so they're hearing good motivations, but also they're hearing the darkness of envy and the mess it causes. So the first one, all men seek to destroy me, that's the voice of Cain, right? Cain, who murdered his brother in envy, then says, everyone is trying to kill me now. And so basically it's saying to the envious, if you persist in this, it will mean that your whole life is going to get sucked into it. That envy has that power. And then a famous story from classical Greek mythology of a woman who was jealous of her sister. And so the god finally gets disgusted and he turns her to stone because she just couldn't stop being envious that her sister was more famous, more beautiful, more whatever. So these two cautionary voices are at the very kind of ends there. So in the end, what we get out of the section is envy is a failure in love. All of these sins, remember, are perversions of love, failures in love, absences of love. Envy is a failure in love. It causes us to focus on the goods of others instead of the good of others. Now, what's really funny is after those last two voices, one of the souls says to Dante, yeah, do you think you're gonna, we'll see you here someday? And Dante goes, yeah, I had a little bit of a struggle with that before this, but I'm done now. I'm cured. And it's like Dante is saying, if you go through this section, these three cantos, and really pray over them and brood over them, it will cure you. Really funny. So at the very end, there's another whole chapter. There's a chapter in between at the end of the envy section. And Virgil gives a little lecture to all of the... He's talking to Dante, but he's basically talking to all humans. And he says, it's because you focus on the prize of worldly goods that envy pumps the bellows for your sighs. But if your longing were turned upward, then your hearts would never be consumed by such a fear. For the more there are who say, ours, not mine, within that cloister burns love divine. So the cloister, the idea of everything held in common, like monks do. And it's like, so we should start more and more, ours, not mine, ours, not mine. And that if we talk that way, then we'll begin to think that way. So finally, it seems like, to summarize, how do we cure envy? You know, bring it home now. Now, like, to start working on this. So the first part is, it seems to me, you have to find friends who love you for you. This is the community of souls who are helping each other. People who love you for you enough that you don't feel like you need some other stuff to get love. Number two, really try to focus on the people and not on their stuff. Don't let your brain dwell on it. Staple your eyes shut. Okay, what's a way of stapling your eyes shut? What would that look like in real life? Yes.
Spending at least an hour of prayer in silence, just listening.
Wow.
When you said on the wedding of Cana, the other thing that Mary said was do whatever he says.
Do whatever he tells you. Yeah, very nice. Yes. If you spend that time, more time in intimate, even with your eyes shut with Jesus, but praying, huh? And that will be better. What else? What else would be? We used to have a phrase in the convent called custody of the eyes. And it meant during grand silence, which would be after like 8:30 at night, after night prayer until after breakfast or the breakfast bell in the morning, we had grand silence. And you didn't break grand silence without a serious reason. But during grand silence, one of the things we did was not make eye contact. If you were passing a sister in the hall, and everybody was on board, so it wasn't like you're being rude. Because me, I'm like a gadfly. Hi, hi, hi. It's like, I don't want anybody to feel hurt. But grand silence gave us all permission to keep our head bowed and cultivate a kind of reflection spirit, recollection. Now, most of us can't do that in our homes with our kids and whatever, but there is the way of saying, I'm going to stop looking at the things that are a problem for me. For me, I had to stop watching HGTV home improvement shows. I'm not kidding. I watched way too many, and I started like lusting after backsplashes and like travertine tile. I started looking at my house like, you know, that shower is so 90s. But I realized that watching those shows was actually making me think way too much about what I didn't have. And there's a lot of that in reality TV, isn't there? So that, it seems to me, would be one thing, but everybody needs to look at their own, what's my thing, and how can I divert my eyes and put my eyes on something else? Yes?
I had a friend that was a pretty successful salesman, and he told me that a good salesman is a prophet of discontent.
A prophet of discontent. Very good. Whatever you have, it's not right. It's not good enough. Yeah. So, yeah, so the end is, if you become a master of love, the science of love, then envy will not be a problem for you. You'll be focusing on what I can do for others, not what I can get from them. This is funny. I had a conversation with my freshman in the honors program last week, actually. And this phrase, the science of love, came out of the book we're reading, The Brothers Karamazov. And one of the students said, what is that science of love thing? And I was like, cool, right? So I said, okay, what is science? And they're all, and so one kid says, the scientific method. And I said, what's that? And they're like, thesis, collecting evidence, experimentation, analysis, re-experimentation, and then new thesis. And I said, good, love like that. Love that seriously. And so I told them, I said, so you all have roommates that are driving you crazy, do you not? It never occurs to them that they're driving their roommates crazy too, by the way. But anyway, and so I said, so now you need to approach it like a science. How can I love this person? I'm going to theorize. I'm going to experiment. I'm going to tweak. I'm going to try again. And I'm going to get better at loving this person like a science. Cool. Okay. Any questions about envy? Anything else anybody want to say there? Okay. All right. Canto 15 is wrath, the wrathful. Now, you remember we met the wrathful in several layers in hell, the wrathful and the sullen, and they were getting very good reasons to be angry in hell. The first thing that happens when we hit this level, they pass through the level where it's all the bruised colors, and they enter the next level, and immediately it's blinding light. Blinding light. He says, the sun's late rays struck us full in the face. I had to shut my eyes to spare my sight. Blinding light. Just off the top of your head, anybody want to offer a reason why blinding light would be the beginning of the cure for people who are stuck in wrath and anger? Yes.
Lights up that tunnel vision.
Oh, very good. There's a man who knows his wrath. Okay. No, yes, Nicola.
Well, it could be a reflection of what God would look like if he didn't hold back the wrath.
Right. Okay, very good. Very good. I like both of those. Yeah. But I think the first one is one Dante really wants to develop, that idea of that rage causes blackness and the inability to see. Imagine if you've ever been so angry that you're literally blinded by it. And so we have to contrast that with the glaring bright light, the clarity of God's love and truth. So right away, this is the first thing, this is a blinding light. And then Dante's coming, he's staggering under the blinding light, and he has three visions. The first vision is the scene of the mother coming up to the 12-year-old boy in the temple. Son, why have you done this to us? And the son saying, did you not know I had to be about my father's business? And Mary going, okay. I am not going to get furious and pull your head off that I have spent 3 days searching for you. I am going to go, oh. And so Mary doesn't succumb to the very human. How many of you, if your kid took off for 3 days, we're talking 12, he's not seven. How many of you would just be like, okay. But Mary could hear him as God. Even though he's her little boy, she could hear him as God. And so she does not choose to be let to vent in rage. The second vision is this great story from classical mythology of Pisistratus. And what happens here is Pisistratus has a beautiful daughter. And this young guy is in love with his daughter. And he gets too flirty with her at a public event. And the mother says, kill him, that's an insult. And so Pisistratus is sitting there and he's, I could be really mad this guy disrespected my daughter in public. But he's a young man. He's ardently in love. He's beautiful. I am not going to get mad. I am going to understand, and I'm going to say, we're just going to pass over this. So it's a very famous story from classical history of very odd restraint on the part of a monarch, where no one would have blamed him if he had lopped the guy's head off. But he chooses not to. The third vision, and this is so cool for us, St. Stephen. So he sees the end of St. Stephen's martyrdom, Stephen praying for his murderers. So not only doesn't Stephen get mad at them, but he prays for them. I have trouble forgiving people for, I don't know, looking at me the wrong way sometimes. But the idea of someone stoning you and then your last breath being, please forgive them, right? So these are the three things that the angry are meant to brood over. This idea of these people who didn't choose anger, and they had a really good reason. Most of us get angry and we don't have a good reason. Now, he comes out of the dream. And Virgil's standing there and he's like, "Where? Wake up, what's with you? I've been waiting here, what are you doing?" And so he's been in this like meditative state. He comes out and in front of them is this huge black cloud, billowing smoke. And so Virgil's like, in we go. So they walk into the black cloud and they find there the wrathful who are in purgatory, and they're singing songs to the Lamb of God, the meek Lamb. But they're getting stung by the smoke. It's burning their eyes. And this goes on for a bit. Huh? It says, there was against the light we came, a billowing of smoke as black as night. So they go from the bright light that I can't see to the dark cloud that I can't see. So it seems like what Dante is saying, and then they come out, by the way, and then it's bright light again. That this repetition of light, darkness, is the cure for the wrathful. that the wrathful actually have to experience the difference between the darkness, the blinding darkness of rage, and the piercing clarity of love. And they have to go through it enough that they're really convinced it's better to be in the light than in the cloud, the dark. While they're there, all the prayers go up are to the meek Lamb of God. Agnus Dei in the background being chanted. The meekness of the Savior, who had plenty of reason to be angry. The last part of the wrathful level is, and this is again the kind of darker tale coming out of the voice of hell, as reminding them the terrible effects of wrath in history and in your own life. So this one, for example, is the story of Esther, where this guy who was angry at the Jews, he felt like he had been snubbed, so he connives with the king to have them all murdered. And there's three different episodes like that that are, they're meant to say, see, this is what anger does. Don't do this. So the cure is this combination of light to dark, blinding, and then clarity, and then these stories. The people who didn't lose it, and then the people who did. So I just throw that out. What does that look like in our... What would be an application of this light to darkness thing for us in real life? Anybody think of how that could be applied? Pretty much all of these can be.
I think in prayer.
Okay. All right.
It's hard to hate somebody if you're praying for them. Mm-hmm. And if you're hating, you're in the darkness. Or if you're angry, and if you're praying for them, you're looking towards the light.
Very good. I think that the community of believers, when we're at our best, to experience that, I'm thinking right now of Walking with Purpose, which I started going to mainly just because I wanted to support Anne Emsley. I was like, yeah, I'm just going to go one or two times and then I'm going to disappear. I'm not a joiner. But I went and I was put in this group with these women, and it's been so beautiful. This is church at its best. A group of people who are only there because we all love Jesus. And we're listening to each other. We're praying for each other really fervently. They made a prayer for me on something, and the next morning it was resolved. I was like, okay, start praying to sell my screenplay now. but it's such a beautiful thing of light in my life, understanding compassion, feeling like I belong and that I'm welcome. I was like, oh, this is church. So I think that we should seek out those things to counter the dark, the cloud of darkness that descends on us when we get mad. And then the more we can keep contrasting, say, I like me better in that one. I'm better there. This one, not so much. But I really think that active seeking out of the light, prayer, and the church. Anybody else have any thoughts on that? Yes.
Thinking, the wrath could be in your own life.
Yes.
The wrath is in your own life.
What yeah.
Is it causes you to be angry, to be at rage, to be, and then to seek resolution in community.
Yes. Yes. And we saw in hell a lot of the causes of wrath, right? People are angry because of their lot in life. They're angry because other people disrespected them. They're angry because, frankly, they just can't make things happen the way they want. They're frustrated by their own limits, and this causes them anger. And then they erupt and into activity, violence. So that wherever you are on that spectrum, but I grew up in a Sicilian family where we used to push back from dinner and have a nice fight as part of the digestive process. And honestly, I had to really say, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to do it anymore. It's just, first of all, you try it with people outside the family and it really doesn't play. But I had to consciously say, I'm not losing my temper again like that. And so I think that we all have to see what the anger is looking like and how it's popping its head out. But anyway, okay. All right, moving ahead. The next one is sloth. This is really always hard for me. Okay, sloth. So, it says, I wakened, but basically what happens at the end of the anger, the wrathful level, Dante falls into a swoon. He's exhausted. It has worn him out, the light to dark. And so he swoons. And then he wakes up. He says, I wakened in an instant to a pack of people running towards us. And what you see here is two people in the back giving motivational phrases and two people in the front waving like a flag and giving motivational phrases. They're all from the Psalms and everything. And it's meant to counter, remember those people that we met on the very first circle of hell, the uncommitted, and they were running around chasing nothing. Now we have a group of people who are trying to keep running as a way of, first of all, getting themselves in motion, but they're really following a good cause. They're chasing after Christ. But they're slothful. And one of the first things that happened on the slothful level, and this is funny, is Dante, so he wakes up and he starts to take a step and he says to Virgil, I am really beat. I think I need to sit down here. And Virgil's like, stand up and get going. And he says, the problem here is the air of this level is infectious. Being around slothful people makes you catch it like a disease. Just a little throwaway. Be careful. Chances are, if you're an active person and you put yourself around slothful people, you're not going to convert them. But anyway, so then they see these people running by. And in fact, one of them says, I don't mean to be rude, but I can't stop. I can't stop. I have to stay running here. I don't want to get out of this new thing, which is movement and activity and surging ahead. But it's the group dynamic that it reminds me in the convent, we used to say that the convent at its best was a holy rivalry in virtue. Where it'd be like, oh, there's a scrap of paper on the floor. I want to be the one to pick it up and spare my sisters having to do that. And I get a special merit because I saved them from having to do that. But that idea of looking for the opportunity to do something for the others, that's what the slothful have to appropriate now. Instead of their own comforts, which up to now has been here in their mind. Their only real reason for doing anything is it feels good. So Dante's like, we have to replace that thinking with, no, it feels better to help them. So here they all are running around, and one of them says this great line, faster, to be slow in love is to lose time. Wouldn't you just like to blazon that on your forehead, huh? Faster, faster, to be slow in love is to lose time. Now, sloth actually comes from the word acedia in the Greek, which means not to care. Somebody put that together, that the real meaning of sloth is not to care. What do you hear me saying by that? What is the real thing of laziness?
Yeah, and I'm just not engaged. I'm not engaged. It hasn't, I don't have a reason to do anything. I don't, and so basically he's going to say it's a failure of love again. So one of the last things he meets on this level is the siren of sloth. And she sidles up to Dante and she says, I was the one that had a really nice relationship with Odysseus. I sang to him and he listened to me and all of his men, and they just wanted to come and crash on my island. And she makes this little play for him. And all of a sudden, Virgil comes up and grabs her. He sees the witch and with one rip laid bare all of her front and her foul belly. I woke sick with the stench. So, in other words, the siren of slothfulness, she pitches herself as your friend, as someone who cares about you. But actually, she's foul and full of putridness. She doesn't care about you. So in this artist, he depicts her as being a spider. Cool. The causes of sloth, I got this from a psychology website, are six for the most part. Why do people not do stuff? Why can't they get started? Number one is a lack of discipline. Literally just can't make the body follow orders. This is what Lent is about, people. Right? Number two, though, is lack of motivation. And this is going to be the one that Dante puts all the focus on. Number three, distractions. I start out to do something and then... and in the end, I get pulled away. Number four, lack of interest. So this is different than lack of motivation. It's, I don't care. It's just not interesting to me. Lack of self-esteem, what's the point? Why should I even try? I'm just setting myself up for failure. And then the fear of failure. If I do try to start correcting myself, I'm gonna end up not, and then I'm gonna hate myself even more. What's the point? So all of these reasons are real reasons why we don't kick ourselves into gear. So if I threw out there and said, wouldn't it be wonderful if everyone, every good Catholic, committed to go to daily mass one day a week? Wouldn't that be beautiful? Ooh, huh? Yeah. Okay, let's start hearing the reasons why you can't. But as soon as you get something presented to you that's a holy inspiration, the sloth kicks in with these of why you can't do it. So the cure for sloth is the energy of love. Thomas Aquinas lays out the four signs that you really love someone. And the first one is melting. That is, your hard edges get softer. You are vulnerable to them. It's a sign that you really love them, that you're not crusty. And this makes you malleable, open to change, more flexible. Number two is piercing. It's much easier to pierce a soft thing than a piece of rock. So the love makes you mellow and vulnerable, and then now you can do sacrifices. You can take on some things that are hard for you in the name of that other. Number three is fervor. This idea of energy. I have all this energy now to do things for you that I didn't have before. You know, this. How else do you explain a mother getting up at 2 a.m. and diapering a baby for 6 months? It's what Aquinas calls the love of dilection. When you keep doing the thing
that you need to do out of love when you're not getting any kind of payoff emotionally. I always use the story of my mother making sandwiches for us when we were all in school. There were four of us in school and Dad, and I don't like mustard. Cynthia doesn't like mayonnaise. Allison doesn't want cheese. She won't eat that. So Mom would make five lunches every day for, what, 20 years? How many years before it stopped being fun? Right? But she kept doing it. She kept doing it, and she paid attention to all our little instructions because she loved us. And so that's the love of dilection, and it's that fervor, that energy that comes to you from love. And then the last sign is rest. I belong. I feel at peace. I feel I'm not stressed. And so those four signs are love, but the third one is energy. So Dante's saying, if you're in the slothful problem, it's because you're not loving enough. If you can find someone to love, it'll kick you out of your sloth. So think about daily mass. Who could I love? Daily mass. Just throwing it out. Lent is coming in 2 days. If you haven't figured out what you're doing, there's a lot of blessings in daily mass. And besides, it's a very elite group of people, and we may not let you join our club anyway. But anyway, okay. All right, any other thoughts about sloth? The main way to cure it is to fall in love. Intentionally, willfully. And he says you grow in love by knowledge, by staring and then feeling compassion swelling your heart, and then you get creative. Yes.
But I think the first thing, I think, falling in love, I think you have to love yourself.
Okay.
If you don't love yourself, how can you love somebody else?
And Jesus has said, love others as you love yourself, so you better not hate yourself.
Right.
Right. No, it's just true.
That's a big thing.
Yeah, St. Thomas writes about appropriate self-love. And that means we have to care for ourselves. Christ has ordered that. And then we can say, okay, now what I do for myself that makes me work and thrive, I now need to do for other people. So, yeah. Okay. All right. Now we have gluttony. Healing gluttony. Now, remember the gluttons? They were gobbling up filth in hell. So here we meet them, and they're all gathered underneath this gorgeous tree full of yummy, delicious fruits. Bright as pure gold was mankind's state at first. Oh, sorry, that's coming up in a second. Yeah. So they're all underneath this beautiful tree with luscious fruits, and they're wasting away from hunger and thirst. It's supposed to be a metaphor to the Garden of Eden, where they're now sitting under that tree, and they're not going to eat the fruit that looks good to eat because they've been told not to. And it looks really good to eat. And they're wasting away. They're really starving. Dante throws this out. He says, in the beginning, nobody cared about food so much. But then, he says, in the brightest pure gold was mankind's state at first. But then we started seasoning our acorns with delight. And then every rill ran sweet to honest thirst, right? So once we started focusing on food as a source of pleasure, and how can we heighten that? Now we got in trouble. So one of the first things with gluttony is to stop it. Stop putting so much of a focus on, you know, how you like your food. Really try to simplify it as so that it stops becoming a source of entertainment for you. I always have to really listen to these because somebody said once to me that it's so dangerous when people text and drive. I'm like, oh, I'm much worse. I eat and drive. And I like things the way I like them. So I can't just eat it. I have to put the sauce on in the right way and have the right sprinkles on everything, right? While I'm like on the freeway. But yeah, this is the first thing is if you have this problem, then you have to consciously say, I am going to make myself not focus so much on making things taste according to my little, it's over the top. He meets Ferrazzi the black Guelph here, who, remember, the black, so Dante is a white Guelph, the black Guelphs were the other party, and then there's the Ghibellines, but he's against the black Guelphs, but he meets Ferrazzi, and he says to him, huh, Ferrazzi, you just died 5 years ago. What are you already doing on the third level here? I would have thought you'd been like 500 years on the pride level. So he's still got a little of this, I'm a white Guelph, you're a black Guelph thing going on. But Ferrazzi answers beautifully, and he says, my wife Nella's flood of tears and prayers have borne me up so soon. Beautiful. So he says this, he says, all those who sing while weeping once loved their stomachs beyond all measure, ere thirst and hunger wring them clean now. There's probably no way to get over gluttony except fasting, according to Dante. There has to be some kind of a measured fast involved. But remember, fasting should always make room for something else, right? My mother used to tell me all the time, some people, Barbara, should consider fasting their tongue. There are other things that we can bring that same fasting energy, right? Basically, this is something I enjoy. It's good. It's not, food isn't bad, and it's not bad culinary expertise, but it's when it becomes a fetish that now you're out of whack. But there's all kinds of things like that. So what do you need to fast from, which has just become too much a part of who you are, too much a, I can't function without, what, my coffee? I can't function without that last hour of video games before I go to bed. Monopoly, anyone? Yeah. Whatever it is, huh? The point of this gluttony level is, what is it that has you in its grip that isn't the simple life of Christ, that the Son of Man, who had nowhere to lay his head, did not obsess over food or anything else for that matter. Okay, that's what I've got. And we will continue purgatory on Saturday, where we talk about pride, and then no session next Monday.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Mystagogy Podcast. The music for the podcast is provided by George Serra. Learn more about his music in the show notes. Until next time, be well and God bless.